out there in TV land, thank you for coming, thanks everybody here. We're going to have Judge McGarity and Mike Maloney talk to us in a minute about credit reports and bankruptcy. It's a really hot topic, we're so excited to be able to present it. Next month, we are going to take a pass, take a skip month on the Lou Jones. There will be a program at the Milwaukee Bar Association on February 6th featuring all the judges. So instead of doing the Lou Jones, we're just going to do that. Then, of course, in March, we have Kohler, so we'll have to see whether we're able to put together another topic or we just skip March as well. But just stay tuned to the email, check the website, and you'll be able to see what's coming up. Again, check the website for the materials for this program, as well as there's an archive of the prior presentations. We appreciate your coming today. Judge McGarity and Mike Maloney.
Okay. Credit reports. You may wonder why a judge would have suggested this, because I don't have any clients. And clients seem to be the ones who really have a stake in this whole thing, because it's not in the bankruptcy code. We don't have to deal with it this much. It really isn't our problem. However, at least in the Eastern District, we have a lot of pro se debtors, and so usually coming in on fee waivers. And I always ask them, particularly if it looks like a pointless bankruptcy to me, why are you filing for bankruptcy? To raise my credit score. And I have also gotten a number of times, my bankruptcy petition preparer said that this would raise my credit score, and so this would be a good thing to do. Okay, so there's a lot of myth and lore out there. I have wondered if by telling somebody, this is not going to raise your credit score, hello, it's on your credit report for 10 years, by the way, why do you want to raise your credit score? This is what got you in trouble in the first place. But nevertheless, there's that out there. And then at the NCBJ, I went to a seminar. Well, there you go. Now I'm an expert. I went to a seminar. And you have Katie Porter's article. She's the one who mostly gave the seminar. And she supposedly is one of the nationwide experts in credit reporting. She's a professor out at the University of California Law School in Irvine. So, you know, it's so distracting to have that thing go on and off and on and off. We're having technical difficulties, it looks like. Oh, well. That's why you don't read newspapers. I get the high sign. It's okay. That's why you don't read newspapers in courtrooms. You might as well be sitting in the back of the courtroom waving a flag. It's very distracting. So anyway, everybody is concerned about their credit score. And there are, well, there's just a lot of ignorance being spread around about what it means to have a credit score, which is not to say that there are right answers about credit scores. But we'll talk about that today, and so then you can go out and, you know, make what you will with it. What's in your credit score? Okay. There are three credit reporting agencies. We all know that. Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. And then there's also a FICO score. And FICO is Fair Isaac Corporation. They take information from the three credit reporting agencies, and they make up their own credit score. Now, there are credit scores that are assigned by the credit reporting agency. They range from 300 to 850. And if you ask for your credit score from each of the credit reporting agencies and from FICO, you will probably get different credit scores for each one. Why would that be? Because they all have their own proprietary secret algorithms that they apply to different factors, and then they come up with a score. None of this is knowable. In fact, Mike, I think you said that you've got some consultants that come up with credit scores for you who used to work for FICO.
Yeah, we had a situation come up where we were trying to prove that something that somebody put on a credit report actually caused their credit report to go down. So we got a couple experts. We said, score your credit report and show us that this is what caused our guy not to get his loan or whatever. And all three of them came up with three different scores, and you can't really prove anything on them because they all weigh different things differently. One may think the bankruptcy is the worst thing. One may think a judgment from whatever year before is a major problem. So it's subjective, really.
Yeah. On page 13 of the materials is an excerpt from the FICO site as to what makes up the credit score. And they weight things like payment history and the amount that you owe versus the amount of credit that's available. For example, credit history is fairly obvious. Have you paid on time? How long have you paid on time? And in the correct amounts, very often we will see debtors that they'll pay on their mortgage, but never the same amount, and it bears no resemblance to what's due on the contract, which gets all messed. That just messes up everything. So the biggest factor is the payment amount or the payment history. The amount owed versus the amount available. If you've got a credit card and your credit limit is $10,000 and you show an amount due of $3,000, then that's obviously going to be better than somebody who has maxed it out at $10,000 because you've got that ratio of credit available versus the amount that's owed. This is also why it will reduce your credit score anytime you take out a credit card, because now you've got more credit available, but the number of credit cards, the number that you have, is also larger. It's very tempting. You want a TV, you go to Best Buy, they say you get a 10% discount if you get a Best Buy credit card. Well, that's true, but you're also going to lower your credit score a bit. And if you've got 30 credit cards, it's going to also lower your credit score. That really would come under the new credit. That's only 10%, according to FICO. Maybe more, maybe less for the credit reporting agencies, but at least it's a factor. Length of credit history says right on my Boston store credit card that I have been a customer since 1974, which is when I got out of law school. They back in those days, they didn't want to give me a credit card because they didn't count the woman's income in their credit. Neither did American Express. I get over things. So
clearly.
No, I have not. but anyway, these are the various factors, but it's nothing that you can actually depend on. If you want to challenge your credit report, you can dispute it. And they have an obligation to take off information that is incomplete, wrong, and actually, or that can't be verified. And really, one of the worst things is if you have a name. Jim Peterson was talking about how difficult it was when he was applying for the judgeship over in Madison, because James Peterson, there must be a million of them, and you have to Google yourself and just try to find, you know, try to find the mistakes there. But someone who has a common name may end up with the bad credit information from somebody else, and then it will really be difficult to make it right. And we see that all the time with objections to claims. Somebody has a common name. There's a claim filed for somebody with the same name by some probably credit or debt buyer who is three or four purchases down the line and doesn't have any record of who this person is, and there's a proof of claim filed, and the debtor doesn't have any clue what this debt is, who this person is. That debtor should go ahead and get a credit report and see if you can fix that up. in a Consumer Reports survey, they surveyed 3,000 respondents, probably people who subscribe to Consumer Reports, who ought to be a fairly savvy group, but only 53% had ever gotten their credit report. And of those who checked, 20% found errors. That's pretty significant, I would say. The Federal Trade Commission also did a survey, a smaller survey, I'm sure a different sampling, but of the people who checked the credit reports, 13% had found errors, and 5% had errors that were serious enough to have an adverse effect on their ability to get credit. If you or your clients are going to get a credit report, you can get one for free once a year at annualcreditreport.com. Don't go anyplace else. Don't try to get a credit report from a pirate playing a guitar or, you know,
Credit Karma. Credit Karma is a big one now.
Yes, yes, they sit on park benches and discuss this matter. Anyway, and actually people are more willing fairly frequently to take advice from the person sitting on the park bench who tells them to check their credit report or to file for bankruptcy. Or maybe it's your aunt or the person on the next bar stool. I don't know. You know, you get that, the clients get that advice. But anyway, annualcreditreport.com, that's the way to go. If you're going to dispute the credit report, you should, of course, put it in writing. Don't just call them up. That won't get you anywhere. I'm not sure if there are any human beings there. But put it in writing, and if you can verify that there is a mistake on your credit report, get that, you know, save all your paperwork, obviously, until the mistake has been corrected. But there can be serious consequences for not getting your credit report and not correcting it. So why do people think that a bankruptcy is going to help their credit report? Well, you get rid of all those debts, and you feel so much better. You know, it's like going to the dentist. So what is the effect of bankruptcy on credit reports? Well, it's not good. It is there for 10 years, but there are certain creditors who target bankruptcy debtors, particularly credit cards, who want to give a credit card to somebody who has gone through bankruptcy because they can't do it again. But you file for bankruptcy. Most people who go into bankruptcy are at about 520 to 540. Now, if in Katie's materials, she indicates that 18% actually do improve their credit score by going through bankruptcy, because before they went into bankruptcy, their credit score was so bad. So sometimes getting rid of those debts is right. But 18% is certainly not the the large majority that I think a lot of consumers think it is. You said you've seen some people who do much better.
Yeah, I mean, the part that most of us tend to forget occasionally is that the credit report is kind of a sign of where the debtor is. I mean, if you look at the last couple of years, the debtor hasn't been doing well. If you don't actually fix their problem, Chapter 7 bankruptcy doesn't do anything for them, because they're going to do the bankruptcy and they're going to fall right back into debt because you haven't fixed the problem. Most of my clients have an income problem. And if you don't fix the income problem, they're not going to have good credit no matter what. So a lot of times, I mean, people come in and they say, you know, and I look at this article and I read it, and it says that, you know, people's credit doesn't get better. But I think that's more indicative of people's finances haven't gotten better.
Right.
And the credit report is just a reflection of those finances. I mean, it's kind of like a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. In a lot of situations, it's like taking an aspirin when you have a brain tumor. It gets rid of your headache for 4 hours, and it comes right back. So,
yeah. Well, I used to tell clients all the time, you know, good legal help is not going to help you nearly as much. What you need is money. And so what you need is income. And I tell the pro se debtors that come before me, you know, the bankruptcy is not going to get rid of your problem. What you need to do is pay on time. That's what's going to help your credit score. And one financial analyst indicated that in order to get to a point where you can get competitive interest rates, particularly with a mortgage, you need to be up to about 680. 620 will get you a mortgage, but it won't be competitive. 680 might get you a competitive mortgage, and most people, it takes at least a five-year history to get to the point where they can get a decent mortgage. For many people, getting a decent mortgage is probably not a realistic goal. Getting a car at less than 30% interest, now that may be a realistic goal and something they want to aim for. But right after bankruptcy, if your credit score is right around 520, 540, something like that, the debtor is probably going to pay 29.9%, and there are only a couple of dealers who will actually deal with them.
Yeah, the one thing that I thought was significant to look at here, though, is they were going to pay 29.9% interest before they filed bankruptcy,
sure,
too, though. So, I mean, the 18% got success. You know, I mean, 0% gets success if nobody files it. So, I mean, like, we know that...
Boy, that's looking at the upside with a vengeance.
Well, right. You know, I mean, well, practically speaking, I mean, none of these people who are coming to us are ever going to get out of credit problems if they don't do anything. I mean, barring I magically make more money,
right,
which isn't realistic from a majority standpoint. So, I mean, the bankruptcy does give them a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. The key really is, and that's where the attorneys come in, is try to fix the problem when you have the clients in your office. I mean, spend the time on the budget and figure it out. I mean, it's a lot easier a lot of times to do that Chapter 7 bankruptcy and just be done and get through it. But if the debtor has been struggling and you put them in a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, they're going to struggle after, too. A lot of times I try to convince people to do Chapter 13, because if you go into a Chapter 13 bankruptcy and things don't work, you still have your Chapter 7. You can convert the case if something else bad happens. You get two kicks at the can. If you go into the Chapter 13 and you make it all the way through, there's some pretty good evidence that you're fixed. You made a payment for 36 months all the way through.
Does that help your credit score better than the 7?
Not really.
Not really.
Wow.
It may make a difference in getting a mortgage. The I think it's Fannie Mae who will consider.
Yeah, FHA guidelines.
FHA is two years, but FHA will approve a mortgage at 1 year after the bankruptcy or the Chapter 13 filing with the approval of the with the court, provided the debtor has kept up payments.
Yeah, you need to show one. FHA guidelines are 620 credit score, which is the harder part.
Right.
While you're in Chapter 13, and then you got to show 1 year of payments that have been current. The last year has to be current. So even if you had a problem early, you can show a year later. But
yeah,
I'm not usually the biggest fan of buying houses during 13s. I'd rather pull you out of one hole before we give you another problem.
Yeah. Fannie Mae, the waiting period is 4 years for a Chapter 7, and then 2 years after a 13 with a Chapter 13 discharge. So there are different guidelines, but I think Mike is correct. What is the definition of stupidity? You know, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. It's sort of like, you know, I eat the same thing every day and I expect to lose weight. Well, duh. It's not going to happen. And the same thing is true of bankruptcy debtors. You've got to change the way you look at money. I'm also fond of telling people that managing money is a survival skill. Like 150 years ago, it might be being able to cut down trees and build a house out of it and you know, kill dinner. But it's a lot bigger problem to get a decent credit score than people are prepared to do oftentimes when they come into bankruptcy. So one of your best shots is to educate them at the time they go through bankruptcy. Okay, you haven't been doing so well. We're going to fix that. But in the future, you've got to change. There's a chart, I think it's on page 17 of the materials, of the effect of bankruptcy on a credit score. And what I found interesting is that if your credit score was 680, which is pretty good, and you file for bankruptcy, well, it drops you down to more like 530. But if it's 780, you drop down to 540. Well, why is it worse if you've had good credit than if you didn't? Well, that's up to the credit reporting agencies and FICO and whoever determines the credit score in their secret and proprietary way.
Because they're more mad at you.
I guess.
You're messing with their formula. You're proving their formula.
if you had a higher score before you went through bankruptcy, they're going to drop you down more. Well, or other kinds of adverse effects, you know, lawsuits, civil judgments, and all those sorts of things. So you know, why it's worse, I don't know. The fact is, it is, and, you know, they do it the way they want to. How do you repair after a bankruptcy? How do you repair it and take those at least 2 years and probably more like five, you know, to get to a point where you've got a chance to have decent credit? Now, the report may still be there. It's there for 10 years. But the farther away in time you get away from that reported bankruptcy, the better off you are as a debtor. Most important, pay on time. Whatever your debts are, pay them on time. Be careful with applying for credit cards. You know, somebody may come along and offer you a credit card because you've gone through bankruptcy and you can't do it again anytime soon. But it's like so many things in life. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And applying for new credit is going to reduce your credit score. If you do have different kinds of credit, for some reason that makes a difference. If you can juggle an installment debt, a student loan, a credit card, a mortgage, car loan, you know, these different types of credit, and manage to keep everything paid on time and up to date, for some reason that variety gives you makes you a better credit risk. Maybe they think that makes you more responsible or something, but it shows the ability to manage credit.
Well, and beyond that, I mean, even just the idea of, I mean, I always tell my clients, okay, there's two things I always want them to do after they get out. One is build savings. They got to build some money, okay? And the reason I want them to build some money is because as soon as they get that some money, I want them to put in a certificate deposit in a bank. When they put in a certificate of deposit in the bank, they can borrow against that certificate of deposit. You can walk into any bank on earth, even with the worst credit score on earth, and if you're borrowing against your own certificate of deposit, they don't care because you're borrowing your own money.
It's a secured credit card, basically, but
you can go to not the shadier people you're dealing with, you know. Well, I shouldn't say that. The bigger banks, but the bigger banks are going to look better on your credit score. They get weighed better. So you're able to create something, and if you screw it up, you're still okay because you didn't out anything. If it's you taking your money out and then paying it back, so it's still the same thing. They just take your CD at the end. So it's kind of a lower risk model where you're basically just paying it back. The other thing is that you try to convince them to change their mindset on how credit cards work. Credit cards are not to use money you don't have. They're the convenience of not having to carry the cash, okay? I have this money. I don't want to use it. It's a credit repair tool. So I tell people, get a credit card once a month, put one tank of gas on it because you have the cash in your pocket and you're just going to put it on there, and then paperclip the cash to the credit card and put it back in your purse, and when the bill comes, pay it. And that's, I mean, I don't know if it works, but that's what I've been telling people for years.
No, but the concept is still good. There's lots of intelligent speculation about credit reports and credit repair. Oh, we lost somebody else. Okay. All of them.
Oh. Well, almost.
The lines are frozen between here and up north or something.
I think we should proceed on.
Just go ahead. All right. Anyway, there's a lot of speculation about credit reports. We see that from, or you see it from the clients who come in. I see it from mostly pro se debtors who come in. But there's a lot of intelligent speculation, too. And secured credit cards, or you know, a credit card banked by a bank account or a CD or something like that, is one suggestion for repairing your credit score and having payments on time and a history of good use of credit. Another commentator said secured credit cards are a red flag that you don't qualify for anything else, and therefore we won't give you credit for that. They also point out that obviously prepaid credit cards are of no use because there's no credit involved. So they're not going to get reported, and there's no reason to bother with that. Debit cards, good use of debit cards. Well, I don't know, maybe, because that's just using the money that you already have. Whether it shows up on your credit report, I don't know. If you overdraft it, sure. But and those adverse effects are something that you don't want staying there. Paying off debts that are in collection, whether that means there's a lawsuit involved or a collection agency or something like that, but those are coded differently. But if you pay off a debt that's in collection and that shows a zero balance, that's not going to have a negative effect on you. But if there are debts in collection, then that will, and so that's obviously something you don't want on your credit report.
And then one of the other big things you got to do after your bankruptcy is you have to pull the credit report and actually make sure that it gets reported correctly. Almost never would be my guess does it get reported correctly. I mean, they get the bankruptcy on there. They always get that on there, but taking balances down to zero, because once the creditors mm-hmm. get your bankruptcy, they just don't do anything. They stop doing everything. They don't send in anything. So the balance just sits there as last reported on the month before you file bankruptcy. You got to get the balance moved down to zero, and then you got to get it listed as this account was handled in bankruptcy. And, I mean, we tell all our clients to go through and dispute everything, because you have to get all those disputes logged. Because if you don't clean that stuff off, it looks like you're already back in debt after you filed your bankruptcy and your credit score is a complete nightmare.
Isn't that a cheerful thought? One other suggestion that came from Consumer Reports is if you can't get anywhere, to complain to the Attorney General Consumer Protection Agency in your particular state or to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And it proudly says that they got some relief, either a monetary payment or a correction, in 30% of the cases. Now, that's where there are mistakes on credit reports. Well, that means 70% of the people who have complained to the Consumer Protection Bureau have not gotten a benefit from it. Maybe they're understaffed, I wouldn't be at all surprised, or just ineffective, or they just run into a brick wall. And if we have time, I'll tell you a personal story about running into one of those brick walls. But anyway, one thing that they don't suggest doing is going to a credit repair program. Now, probably most of you in this room, and I know I certainly have seen, when we get music with the techie repair, is folks who have paid some agency they found on the internet. It's always on the internet. There's never an actual physical office where this can be done. People who promise to fix your mortgage problems with your lender and take about $4,000 from you, and then evaporate into the ether. And I'm real skeptical of either folks who promise to fix a mortgage problem or to fix a credit problem. I'm sure there are some that are very well intentioned out there, and there are some free ones too that are run by social service agencies or churches or those sorts of folks. But I think people have to, of course, take ownership of their own credit, because having credit, as I said, is a survival skill that is necessary in this day and age, and so they should be able to do it. Anything else on that note?
No, I think that's about it.
All right. As far as people being able to turn things around, in the article that you've been handed out, Professor Porter said that for most people, or on an average, now there are very few comprehensive studies on this, almost none, really. So it's a very mushy area, probably why I like it. But there aren't definitive answers, but the survey that a couple of people did found that filers versus non-filers, it took about 13 years after bankruptcy to get to the same level of income. I mean, accounting for all of the variables and doing a regression analysis and those statistical things that lawyers don't do. But 13 years to equalize income, filers versus non-filers. 12 years to get back to the point where they have about the same amount of savings, and 20 years for net worth. I think there are probably some other factors there. It could be income that goes up and down. It could be, any number of things. And of course, maybe the personalities of the people involved. Even very intelligent people, will go into a store and charge things and think, I'm walking out of here and I don't have to pay for this, even though they write the bills at the end of the month. It's an emotional thing as opposed to a rational and analytical thing. But people have to have insight into their own personalities and what they're going to be able to do and what they aren't. One of my pet peeves is cars or vehicles. A vehicle is something that you might as well get your mind around the fact that it is a consumable. It's not an investment. How many times have we heard people say they want to reaffirm on a car because I've got all this money in it and I don't want to lose it? Well, bulletin, you already have. Look at the amount you paid for the car, what it's worth now, and what you still owe on it. It's gone. It's a consumable. So don't even think about a car as an investment. And many times, you see debtors who are driving around in very expensive vehicles. And I tell them, you're driving around in your future. If you're going to spend all that money on a car, then you're going to have that much less in savings. And if you're going to try to live on Social Security, that'll buy you a rooming house with a bath down the hall and dog food at the end of the month. You need to have some savings in order to look to the future. Now, maybe you'll get lucky and die when you're 50. But that's not everybody's solution of choice, shall we say, for a credit problem. So that's just, anyway, across the board.
What's the alternative? Reaffirm the car I have, or
go to 30% interest rate.
Interest on a crappier car.
Probably nothing right now. Okay. But in the future, next time, you don't need a $40,000 car.
Well, I think
something else.
I think the solution for a lot of people is jalopy.
Mm-hmm.
It is junker. I mean, some people just have to. I mean, the Social Security disability type person, there's no money in Social Security disability for any financing. Whenever those people call me and say, I'd like to fix my credit, well, you don't have enough money to have credit. and they get mad.
Right.
But that's too bad. That's the way the system's set up. You get like $700-$800 a year. There's no extra money for a payment on anything. You're not a bad person. You just can't pay payments on stuff. It's not there. So, I mean, on that, I mean, it's you got to go to a clunker. I mean, if you buy a $1,000 car with your tax refunds and you do it every single year, you're paying less than $100 a month for a car payment. You're actually in better shape than someone going out probably and buying a $4,000 car.
Yeah.
You know?
But think of it as a consumable. That's something that you're going to consume. And also realize that, and this is very hard for people who have absolutely nothing and are, you know, living right at the edge, that you got to think long term. And we see, of course, a lot of people who file in April in order to keep your utilities on. Okay, now that's good for, your discharge is good for 8 years. What are you going to do next November? And they can't think about next November because they need their lights on right now. But again, it requires a change in a mindset and a lot of hard work. But anyway, okay. Last October, which was the bankruptcy update for the state bar, I mentioned this seminar that I went to with Professor Porter, and she had said that she had it in writing that there are no major lenders that require a reaffirmation in order to do a mortgage modification. Well, that morphed into a long discourse on the listserv about reaffirming mortgage debts. Professor Porter's point of view is that you should never, ever, ever reaffirm a mortgage debt. And, of course, the problem that follows that is, what about people who later want to refinance when they have no credit reporting of mortgage payments that are made? Now, I think a lot of that is because Professor Porter lives in California. And it's very common out there, the numbers may be different, but people will pay $500,000 for a house. They've got a mortgage that's now $400,000. They've got a house that's worth $200,000 now because it has dropped. So there's no way they can either sell it or refinance to get out from under it. They go through bankruptcy. Why would they want to reaffirm that debt? And there may be deficiencies. In Wisconsin, we don't have deficiencies so much. We have not had the kind of, in most cases, plunging value of the debt versus the value of the collateral. And so there may sometimes be reasons to reaffirm the debt. Now, if the debtor has been rather irregular in mortgage payments, nevertheless wants to keep the house, you don't want that reported. If you're going to reaffirm the debt and they're going to, you know, miss a payment every July and January, you're better off not reaffirming that debt and just dealing with the mortgage without the reporting. But there are a lot of complaints that mortgage holders, justifiably or not, if a debt's not reaffirmed, a mortgage is not reaffirmed, are not going to report the payments that are made voluntarily on that mortgage. Why not? Well, they don't have to. Section 1681C of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which is on page 12, deals with credit reporting agencies. And it says that the credit reporting agency is not at fault if the consumer pays the debt, but it doesn't violate anything if they're not informed by either the store or the consumer of the later payment. So if you've got somebody who hasn't reaffirmed the debt and keeps paying the mortgage, on time or not, the bank is not going to inform the credit reporting agency. Why? Because they don't have to. The credit reporting agency has to get it right if they are informed. But if they're not informed, they don't have to. And there's nothing that would require informing a credit reporting agency of a voluntary payment. And there are banks that worry that it might look like they are violating the discharge injunction, that they are coercing somebody to make payments because they tell them, we're not going to report any payments that you make. And there is case law, on at least on this part. There were no sanctions involved, but and that's in the second handout.
I mean, they are, I mean, I...
Yes, people like you will sue them.
I know, but it doesn't, most likely, regardless of what they do. it's a hard one because I don't want them to report it wrong. I just want them to get it right. Just get it right. It's easy. And, you know, I mean, someone could write a computer program that could say, oh, when you make a payment this, or if it's bankruptcy, don't report anything if it's negative. But I think they're coercing you to pay it by not reporting it, too. They're forcing you to go out and get a different mortgage to pay off this mortgage so that you can get your credit report right and get your payments recorded correctly.
Why can't you, when you're ready to either refinance or buy a new house or something like that, why can't you just get verification from the bank that, you know, if you filed in December of 2005 and you're still paying,
because
get a report of the payments and you...
I know, but you're dealing with a mortgage broker when you're getting your new loan. I mean, they have their little formula and their little manual, too. And it says, get the credit report and look at this. Oh, it's not there. Underwriting denied you. Goodbye. That's what winds up happening. You don't get to, like, have a conversation with them and say, look, I have a payment history. I've been paying.
No.
Don't care.
Well, I'm talking about get a verification from the bank that you have been paying. Send that to the credit reporting agency. The credit reporting agency then puts it on your credit report that you have made payments. Because that's what this says. If they have been informed by the consumer, why isn't that good enough? Now, you got to have plenty of lead time.
Well, I don't
know.
I mean, is the mortgage company even going to send you that? I mean, I think they may refuse to even send you that
after you've been paying them?
Yes.
If
I think they don't talk to you at all.
Well, that could be true.
Isn't there like RESPA or something that you could use to demand that they give you a payment history?
Yeah, typically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then that's what, 60 days? You get a RESPA?
60 business days, I believe,
okay,
on RESPA, so it's like longer.
All right. But it takes a lot of lead time.
Bob?
Bob?
There's a way to fix it.
How do you fix it?
It's called a rapid rescore.
Rapid rescore.
Yeah, you go to the right mortgage broker. What they do is they order the history, like you just said, and they got to provide it for you on the RESPA. And then they will create a credit report as if you made the payments over this period of time. You got to find the right broker, but they'll do it. And then
okay,
it will show that your credit score is up here instead of down here.
Okay. There you go. You get an as-if credit report if the mortgage broker will cooperate with that. Okay. But you correct the credit report. Yeah, I mean, and it does take some lead time, and it does take some sophistication. And, you know, many times people don't have that. So, but it is possible for you to correct your own credit report. All right. Well, that's good to know. Let me see. And reaffirmations on mortgages. If you reaffirm a mortgage and make your payments on time, you know, sometimes people forget that. It's going to take you years to get your credit report up if you make your payments on time. So if you've got equity in the house and it makes sense to do that on your first mortgage at least, fine. Then maybe you can get a decent car loan. Who knows whether you'll be able to refinance. It seems to me you ought to be able to refinance with your own lender if you've been making payments on a mortgage that was not reaffirmed and wasn't reported, because they will have their own bank records. Going to a third-party lender is more problematic, and that would require going back and making sure that your credit report is accurate. Does anyone else have a, what did you call that, Bob?
Rapid rescore.
Rapid Rescore. Okay. Has anybody else had any experience with Rapid Rescore? Bob, you're all by yourself.
I'll give you the name of the broker.
Remember that. Rapid Rescore, call Bob Watt. that's useful. Has anyone else had a technique that has worked for repairing credit reports? The silence is deafening. Doug.
Well, when I used to do private filings, and I don't know if it's still a technique, I would have the debtors pick two or three small credit cards, like Amoco or Fossils or whatever, have them pay them off if they were under $600, and then they owed nothing, so they didn't have to put it on their creditor list. And then they could go back later and point out that, yes, I went bankrupt in 2015, but I kept my Boston store, BP Amoco, whatever, credit cards current, and improved their rating to show their ability to repay debts. And I don't know if that's a technique still used or not.
Well, yeah, Doug, for those of you who couldn't hear that, Doug's suggestion was keep zero balances on a couple of credit cards so they are not a creditor at the time of the bankruptcy, and then continue using the credit cards so and paying on time and not going into collection and not having any adverse events, things like that. Keep it going. Which brings me to my own war story. I'm in Kohl's. I've got my 30% coupon. All right? I have found
it's
some selections.
Because mine was only 20%.
Okay. It was, I got lucky that month whenever they were handing them out. Okay, I get to checkout. You've got to use your Kohl's credit card in order to get your 30%. I get up there, and the woman says, your card's been canceled. What? I don't even owe them any money. Zero balance. Okay. I go to the yellow phone on the wall to find out what has happened. They said, I'm sorry, your credit card was canceled because you went through bankruptcy. And after I quit laughing, I explained that, no, I'm a bankruptcy judge, and I did not go through bankruptcy. Somebody just got the name off the notice of somebody, whoever was doing the data input that day, put in one name and not the other. And by the way, I'm surprised that Janet Medlock, our clerk, any of the trustees around here haven't had this happen. I got lucky. I've had it happen twice. Anyway, so somebody had input my name instead of somebody else's. Zero balance on that credit card. They canceled it. So that was not, that would not have been an option for me. And just to finish it off, I called them on a regular basis. Oh, well, at that time, I not only talked to the credit person in Honduras or wherever he was, I also talked to a supervisor, explained the situation, and I said, you know, look at my application. It says what I do for a living. Google me, for Pete's sake. We can't do that.
Not in the manual.
It's not in the manual. And and this was a supervisor, and I said, well, how can I get it fixed? I don't know, because that wasn't part of it. Well, I tried three or four times, because I'm a slow learner sometimes. It just didn't make any sense to me that there was nobody that could override this. Oh, and what he said was, we take this off the credit reports. The credit reporting agencies mine the data systems in the court. We take it off, so it must be on your credit report. Well, now he had my attention. So I got my three credit reports. No, it was Kohl's. It was not the credit reporting agency. But the cancellation of the credit card could have been an adverse event that would have gone on my credit history, and then I would have lived with it for the rest of my life. So I was very concerned that I get this fixed quickly. And anyway, but each time I called and talked to a supervisor and told the story again and again, I got, you're absolutely right, we were wrong, we're very sorry, and there's nothing we can do about it. And I would say, then who can do something about it? I don't know. Who's over you? What supervisor? Well, nobody. Don't you have a troubleshooter? No. Can't override it. I ended up writing to the CEO of Kohl's and got a call from an assistant who said that she would, if I buy something, send her the receipt, and then she would give me a 15% discount. I said, the chance of my doing that is slim to none. I am so not doing that.
Yeah, I want my 30%.
I wanted my 30%. And I wanted a 30% that I could present at the checkout. I did call the legal department, too. One of Judge Shapiro's former clerks works for the legal department at Kohl's. She was on maternity leave. Didn't get anywhere there. But I did get a new credit card. But I am not a frequent customer of Kohl's right now. So, but what the point is, they have their formulas, like Mike said. They have their protocol. It's like colleges that look only at your ACT or SAT, and you have no other factors in your personality. You have a credit score. They go along with that credit score, and there is no wavering, because that would require a human being with discretion. I said it had happened twice. I got my account closed at M&I because I filed for bankruptcy. My checking account, my husband got on the phone. I don't know what he said and to whom, and don't ever want to know. But it was fixed within hours, because what he got was a human being with discretion and judgment. And credit reports don't have that.
That must have been a couple years ago.
Oh, it was about 20 years ago.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're seeing it so much now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know in my practice, my form says this. I don't care what your form says. I have a law. I have a judgment. What do you want me to do? I don't know.
I can't.
And that's what they say. It's not on the flow chart. I can only answer the question if you ask a question that's on this flow chart. And you are saying all kinds of stuff I don't understand.
Okay, anybody else got a suggestion? Yes, Jay.
Couldn't be super defamation?
Well, they didn't report it. In my case, it wasn't reported. If they reported the canceled credit card, maybe I could sue for defamation. No, I just want 30% off a pair of jeans. I don't want that kind of grief. But I would dispute it in writing so that it's on file there and just not go there again. Vote with my feet, as it were. Anybody else got a suggestion? Lawsuits for defamation, where are you going to go? I mean, it's going to cost a lot. It's just not practical. But if you want to do that, I mean, there could be times.
Contact 6 or something like that.
Contact 6 would have been fun.
Yeah.
It would have been a lot of fun. I just wanted my 30%.
I cringe every time it comes on and hope it's not one of my clients.
Yeah. Anybody else? We're about out of time. Doug.
Our lawyers in doing the affirmations on mortgages in general, or when the lender is requesting it, and there's equity in the property, or it's break even, or are they just not doing them and making payments to the lender and seeing what happens?
I mean, with me, I lay out the options to my client in like a nice big long page letter and say, what do you want to do? I mean, honestly, I'm not in this to, my crystal ball is no better than theirs is. I don't know if they're going to make payments, lose their job, not pay for their house or whatever. So the only thing I can really do is give them an informed choice, and then whatever they want to do, I'll help them with whatever that is. But I mean, I whenever I hear like our lawyers reaffirming, I'm not reaffirming anything.
No,
you know, I mean, well, I know, but I mean, a lot of times I hear people, you see it on the listserv, you see it in national things. Tell your clients to reaffirm. Tell your clients not to reaffirm.
Give them a choice and
that.
The consequences that follow from that choice.
Yeah.
Ben?
The only thing I add to that is that with respect to the mortgages on homes or other real estate, particularly if the term of the loan is relatively short, not 18 more years on a 30-year mortgage if it's short. From lender side, I've had a hard time figuring out how we can refinance one that wasn't refinanced without violating the insurance. So, to the extent that you've got a loan that can't come due yet, you know, a private ARM and its term note becomes due in the fifth year of the loan again, your ability to refinance that with that lender is going to be hurt, if it's my lender anyway, because we don't think that we can do anything but non-recourse loans on those refinancings. And typically, just anecdotally, it's easier to refinance with your existing lender than it is to refinance with a renewal note, than it is to refinance with a brand new lender because of underwriting requirements. So.
And that's a good point, because and there is a case that's cited in that second handout, where there was a refinance which rolled in a discharged mortgage, and that was declared void. So you, if you don't refinance, at least on the first mortgage, you will have a problem rolling in that unpaid, you know, what is a non-recourse debt after that. So you have to be real careful of that. Yep. Yeah.
Does anyone know the effect of a 128 on credit scores?
No.
I've been told that 8 through the 128, those were plus the first four ads being paid to the state and aids and people typically.
Okay, 128s are reported as being paid through a state repayment plan, which is probably kind of like being in collection, whatever that means. I don't know. And it may be like a 13, you know, the payments are made, so that's bound to be positive.
Did you ever pay them off or never just report it?
Never just report it, right? They have no idea what's going on.
I wonder.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for mentioned right now, starting right now, we're going to have a care meeting, credit and use resistance education. It's a program that our associate at Medlock is spearheading to bring some lawyers into the high schools and do a little bit of credit training so maybe they don't have to face these issues someday. So please, you're welcome to stay if you don't have commitments and find out what it's about, and we would welcome your participation. We are going to skip the Lou Jones in February. And we invite you to come over to the Mortgage Bar Association on February 6th, where all the judges are going to be presenting an annual roundtable. And just stay tuned as far as what we're going to do in March. Thank you again for coming.